Well, as you know, Angie's book club launched earlier this month, and the first book was You Need This to Get What You Want, and it's by Scott Solder and Mark Palmer. And Scott and Mark have joined me once again, and we're going to have a little bit of an extended love letters session. What I've actually asked Mark and Scott to do is to give me their take on some of the love letters that have come in. And love letters, it's very, very popular, as you know. magic.co.uk/love letters is where I go to every morning, look in my inbox, and the letters just come flooding in. But we just thought, let's speak to Mark and Scott about some of these letters. So what I'm going to do, thanks for joining me once again, guys. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read a few letters out, and then I'd like you to give me your take on where you think the writer of the letter is coming from, if you think the letter's real. Do you think that the person is needy? Do you think they're in a relationship that is going somewhere? Is it one-sided? You give me your take on the letter. Okay. So we'll start with Danny Ramaya. And Danny is from Middlesex. And Danny writes, Dear Angie, I am a student in the UK. And every night I listen to your show, just listening to the beautiful songs. They make me feel closer to my fiancée, Jelena. Now, the sad thing is that we're not together. Jelena is in sunny Mauritius and I am in snowy London. We were friends before we got engaged last year. And for the past 3 years that we have been together, we've actually only seen each other about 6 weeks of that time. Unbelievable, I know. But it's only when I go on holiday that I see that we are able to be together. But listening to love letters makes me feel that she's with me in my arms. And just thinking of her makes me smile, and I cannot think of a life without her. I want Jelena to know that I'm thinking of her, even though we are so far apart, and that I love her, and that she will always be my angel. And that's from Danny Mariah, who's from Middlesex. So, Mark, Scott, you're going to give me your take on this letter. Who's going to go first?
Well, that's not a large amount of time within 3 years. So, you know, to me it sounds there's a big... obviously a big distance between the two of them, and it seems like the only time that they've seen each other is either on holiday or on a visit or something like that. So I think first step for me would be, you know, get to know each other, spend some more time together. I'm not sure what's stopping them being together, whether that's work or other commitments, but be slightly cautious in that if you're together in Mauritius, is it Mauritius?
Yeah.
Or the Maldives, wherever it was, you know, you're kind of taken out of reality slightly because you're on a beautiful paradise island. So your filters, I think we spoke about filters last time.
Yes.
Your filters are set to have a great time because you're in Mauritius. So you're kind of detached from reality slightly. So for me, I would want them to spend more time together in the real world, if you like. You know, if their real world is Mauritius, then happy days. Go there and live there. But if their real world is London, perhaps they should spend a bit more time in London, going through the everyday things that we do, just to cement the relationship, really.
Okay, Scott?
And I just want to add, there's a line in there, he says, and I can't imagine life without her.
Yes.
Listen, mate, you are living life without her. Just 2 weeks a year, that's what that averages to. 2 weeks a year. He's having a holiday romance once a year with the same girl. And... you know, that line, I can't imagine life without her, tells me that the concept of having life without her is very high in his mind. Having the odd couple of weeks together may be convincing him at one level that he's actually in a long relationship with her, but he knows really he's not. You know what? What are the obstacles? Look at what's in the way of getting together properly and move some of those out the way, because it's nice at the moment, but I think the tone of that letter tells us it really is far from perfect.
Mm.
What's your take on holiday romances then, Scott?
I think holiday romances play a great role. They're a marvellous time to be had in a kind of fantasy world which isn't real. You're away from home. You meet the person of your dreams.
Your adrenaline goes through the roof.
You know, it might not be Mr. or Mrs. Right, but it's Mr. or Mrs. Right now.
Yeah.
And so you have a good time, and then you go home and you look back through tinted lenses, and sometimes that's a great thing. It's a good feel-good factor, but never confuse a holiday romance with what it would be like if you were living at home here in London. It's one of those grey days, you know, one of you's in the shower and the other one's in a rush and you can't get in the bathroom, and perhaps, you know, the postman hasn't arrived yet and you're dying for one of the waiting for a letter to arrive, or the tubes are packing up. What would it be like then, you know?
And you know, a holiday is a good thing. So you'll only remember that person in a good way.
Okay.
And that can be slightly distorted from what it should be, you know, when we get back to London or wherever it is we live. So it's a slightly, you're slightly detached from reality. You really need to get back down to the nitty-gritty. What would it be like to live together? You know, people make the same decisions about moving abroad. They go, oh, God, I want to go to Italy because I've been there on holiday and it's fantastic. But actually, living in Italy full-time versus going to Tuscany for 2 weeks a year is very, very different, as we all know. So you really need to experience it for what it really is and what it could be. So that might mean them coming over here, for example, and experiencing our lovely climate.
Hmm. Let's move on to our next letter, yeah? Magic 105.4. It is Mellow Magic Love Letters. Scott Solder and Mark Palmer are going to be giving us their analysis. Is it a psychoanalysis of these letters? What would you...
Well, we're listening to the language. You know, people reveal an awful lot in their communication. We're reading the letters and we're looking at the words within the letter. And from those words, we're able to extract what they really mean, because people communicate consciously and their subconscious comes out in the letters too. So we're able to figure out, if you like, what's really going on behind the words in the letter.
Okay, before I read the letter, can I just ask you, because I can always remember my dad telling me as a little girl, sometimes when you talk to people, you need to listen to what they're not saying,
mm-hmm. Yep.
as well as what they are saying, because sometimes silence is loud.
Mm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Do we write in the same way?
I think we do. I think
more so, I would say.
I think it's more obvious that the thing that you don't get in writing is intonation. So you can't hear how people are saying things. You can't hear whether their voice is going up at the end of the sentence or down at the end of the sentence, which is quite telling when you're having a proper conversation like
yes.
this. But if somebody's writing, you can take your time. You can look at what's appears to be driving them. You can look at what words are missing. You can look at words that they choose that perhaps tell you quite a lot. I mean, let's have a look at the letter that you've got, and we'll try and give you an example.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on. Our next letter is from Will Carl. He's from North London. And it starts, "Hey, Angie, thanks for all the good work letting us reach out to our loved ones. This letter is for a special lady in my life. Her name is CJ. She lives in Chatham in Kent. And as she lives quite a distance, I do tend to miss her terribly. I spend my days and nights thinking about her, wishing that she was here with me. I love CJ so much, and I look forward to the day that she comes home to me, because it is only then that everything will become golden, like it used to be. CJ, I have never given up the dream of you becoming my wife one day. Take care, loads of love." And that's from Will.
Oh, Will.
Oh,
Will.
Scott, come on.
I'm getting a massive message of everything is out of control here. He's saying that only then, when you're together, will it be golden again. He spends his time wishing that they were together. He's handed control to circumstances all around him, but he's not taking control himself. So, actually, why is she living in Chatham? And does that mean that when she's not there and you're wishing she was, that you can't do something about that by making sure that she is there? Can you bring her home? Can you go to Chatham? Can you both change your circumstances so that you're not just wishing things were better than they were? I would go as far as to say that CJ maybe doesn't want Will as much as Will wants CJ. If I'm wrong, then CJ and Will only need to do one thing, don't they? And that is to change the situation, because if I'm wrong, CJ's feeling the same way. How ridiculous. Will is there in one bed, CJ is there in another bed, miles apart from each other, and they're both wishing that they were together, because only then will things be golden again. Mm. You know what? Make them golden again, or give up.
I mean, you know, I don't want to get too technical here, but the word golden is what we would call a submodality. So this means when he thinks about something in his mind, he probably is creating a picture in his mind, an internal thought, and it probably has a gold hue to it or a gold colour to it. So that means it's a really positive association. Now, in his mind, that's way up there. That's the ideal. That's the dream. That's the wish. He's probably slightly apprehensive that maybe both of them are, about getting together again, because maybe the golden goes down to a kind of a bronze.
I think also rather than aspire to this gold, so that you're either here where it's not gold or you're there where it is gold, there doesn't seem to be any middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's kind of setting himself up for disappointment there. How about if we get to bronze first?
Okay.
And then after we've got to bronze, let's go for silver and see what it's like when it's all silver. And then maybe once we've got to silver, make it even better to get to golden. But the trouble is, you know, it's almost like they're frightened of going for it in case it's not golden. Oh. And you know what? That doesn't mean it's a failure.
How about getting into the race first? You know, they're not even together. You know, they live apart. How about meeting up and seeing how it goes?
Okay. All right. Well, look, shall we move to Stephen Jackson's letter? Stephen is from Manchester. He's in love with the girl that he met at college and he wants her to know. So let me read this one to you. Dear Angie, I met this beautiful girl at college called Kelly, and she has beautiful swaying red hair. She reminds me of someone I used to know. She doesn't know it yet, but I like her very much, and I long to tell her how I feel. We are great friends, so I want to surprise her in a special way, and I know that she listens to Magic every night, so this is my chance to let her know that I've fallen for her. Lots of love, Stephen. And Mark and Scott look like they both want to giggle.
It's high risk, isn't it?
It's super a high risk strategy.
Talk about putting yourself out there. You know, it's high risk. You know, good luck to him, and I hope it pays off. But I'm hoping he's based that letter on some kind of reality and some kind of either subconscious body language type non-verbals or some kind of inclination that she does feel a similar way to him. Because, you know, he's just announced it on the radio, and it's a bit, it reminds me of, I think it's a film, is it The Wedding Singers? Do you remember, is it Vince Vaughn in it?
Yes.
Have you seen that film?
Yeah.
In the film, one of them, the guy stands up and he announces...
Wedding Crashers,
the sort of baddie of the film stands up and announces that he's engagement to the sort of heroine of the film, and Vince Vaughn's, you know, pretty taken aback, but the rest of the family go, oh, congratulations, and she goes along with it even though she doesn't feel the same way. So I think there is a danger here, a real danger, that because it's been announced to the public as such, that she may feel obliged and pressured into reciprocating and feeling the same way. So, and I hope that she doesn't, because I think, you know, good luck to him that he's done it this way. But, you know, he needs to read the situation now, so the next time they meet he needs to know that she feels the same way, and that's where body language would play a crucial part.
I mean, on the assumption that that there is a chance that Kelly is going to respond positively to this,
right.
There are some things that Stephen can look out for from this moment, so that when he actually sees her for the first time, don't forget this message has just gone to Kelly via the radio. He can't see how she's reacting at all. So when he's talking to her, whatever she's saying, he needs to look at her face and just see if her face is matching the words that are coming out of her mouth.
Which isn't always the case, is it?
No.
It's not always the case. We call it congruence in jargon. You need to check that that what you see is matching what you hear. You've got to listen out for the tonality of the voice.
Mm.
Listen, make sure she sounds convinced of what she's saying. There's a huge difference between "that was really sweet" and "that was really sweet."
Yeah.
Same words, but they mean a completely different
but
thing.
But some people are very convincing with their words, Scott. Some people are able to deliver in such a way that is quite powerful, it's quite engaging, it's quite strong.
But you know what? The feet have it. So every
the feet
time
have
the
it?
Feet have it, check someone's feet, however convincing they're coming across. Just have a look and see where their feet are pointing. You see, the further you move down the body, the less responsible it is for giving away what's really going on in your head. So if you really want to know what's going on, move down the body. People are very good at controlling their face. They're very good at controlling their hands and their arms. But once you get down to knees and feet, then everything can be betrayed. So actually, if somebody is paying you attention, their feet will be pointing at you. Check out your feet now, Angie. You're probably...
Well, I've got
pointing.
One at you and I've got one at
yep.
Mark.
There you go. So yep. It's an unconscious or subconscious behaviour, but it happens all the time. And one, I'll give you a bit of mischief. If ever you're... This works very well on Valentine's Day, actually. If you happen to be out in a restaurant on Valentine's Day, have a look at all the other couples.
Right.
And you can check... which ones are interested in each other just by looking at their feet.
Now, I'm going to go there with you in a moment. Eyes, it's an old, I don't know if it's an old spiritual, it's just something we learnt growing up in Sunday school. The eyes are the window of the soul. You've heard this one.
We know a lot about eyes.
Okay.
A lot about eyes, yeah.
And just in talking to you now about body language, you see, my take on it, and I spoke to you on the phone about this because I said we have to talk about body language because it's just blowing my mind. My take was that if I'm looking at you, we are engaging, you will believe everything that I'm saying. But you've just talked about looking further down the body. And I always felt that if your eyes were connecting with somebody and you were looking them straight in the eye, you've got them. But it's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, I mean, there's loads of things going on with the eyes. There's a cultural difference, you know, that certainly the sort of Asian countries, Japan, don't like eye contact. So you've got to take it in context. Normally, that there's the old myth that if we're making eye contact, then I'm telling the truth. You've probably heard that one. And if I'm looking shady at the floor, then I'm telling a lie.
Yes.
I mean, that is the is a myth. So just ditch that completely. With the eyes, there's a way that you cannot get away from. It's pupil dilation. If you're close enough, so within a couple of feet of each other, which most people are when they're, you know, talking or intimate with each other, if your pupils get bigger, that's a good sign that you like me and you like what I'm saying. If your pupils get smaller, that's a good sign that you don't like what I'm saying and perhaps you don't like me. So perhaps when Stephen talks to Kelly, if he says, look, you heard the thing on magic, obviously, and her pupils go massively small, I can tell you now...
She
doesn't like it, and she doesn't care. And that is almost a foolproof method to tell if someone actually likes what you're saying. There's also where your eyes look. So if you when you look up, most people will see a picture in their head. It means you're visualising. So as your eyes flicker up to the sky, you just come back off holiday, right?
Yeah.
What was your favourite memory of your holiday?
Oh, my goodness. Just seeing palm trees and perfect blue skies, no cloud, and 28 degrees.
So let me just explain what happened there. In psychologically speaking...
I saw it in my mind.
You saw it in your mind, and I know that you saw a picture because your eyes flicked upwards and they looked up to the sky, and I saw that. So I know you're seeing a picture. I don't necessarily need to know what picture you're seeing, but I know that you're seeing a picture. So if I want to know if someone is engaged with me and is with me, I want to see them visualising pictures that I want them to visualise. So if I'm talking about let's go on holiday together, it'll be great, it'll be warm, it'll be sunny. I want you to think about that picture. Now, if you're looking directly at me and your eyes aren't moving, then I know, well, she's probably not that
bothered.
It's
not really very convincing, is it?
No, but if you look up and go, oh, great, I can see palm trees, coconuts, sunny beaches, I know you're doing that because your eyes are looking up, like, you know, literally up to the sky.
And one way of deliberately... forging a close connection with somebody, if you really want to be on the same page, is just to get them to visualise. And there are plenty of ways of doing that. Just say, oh God, you know, have you ever been to the Caribbean, Angie?
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Okay, and what's the favourite part of the Caribbean for you? What's the best bit?
Seeing completely blue water. White sand.
Okay, let me just stop you there, right? So you closed your eyes at that moment.
Right, yeah.
And probably looked up from underneath your eyelids. But I know that you visualised because you said seeing completely blue water and white sand.
Yeah.
Once I've got you seeing things in your own mind's eye, I've got you in your own personal theatre. And that is going to forge a deep connection between you and me. You're now on the same page as me, and actually we're going to get on fine. So if you are on a date, or if you're in the early stages of a relationship, if you can just encourage the other person to visualize good things, you're going to find that you're going to get on much more quickly, and you'll get over that initial awkwardness that often occurs in any new relationship.
I just want to blow a couple of myths out of the water as well, for Stephen's sake, more than anyone else's. If when he meets Kelly, she's got her arms crossed, we've all come across that one, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Means defensive. No, it doesn't. So just throw that one out. You have to take each piece of information and put it together with what else is going on. So it could just mean my arms are folded, I'm feeling a bit cold. Yeah. Or it could just mean I'm feeling quite comfortable, so my arms are folded. Okay. Now, if my arms are folded, I'm looking towards the door, and my feet are pointing towards the door, then you can say they don't like me.
Okay.
But if my arms are folded and my feet are pointing towards you and I'm making good eye contact and your pupils are big, then you can ignore the arms. Does that make sense? Because most people would think, right. Oh, arms folded, defensive. In the same way, that's actually in the book, but in the same way that I fell for the old trick for years and years, that if she's twiddling her hair, it means she must fancy me. So if we're talking at a bar and a girl is twiddling their hair as they're talking to me, oh, she fancies me. Wrong. Trust me, I've been on the receiving end of that one many times. So you've got to take the full picture. You've got to look at what's going on in the eyes, as we've already spoken about, but also look at the feet, look at the head, look at the direction of the body. Are they pointing towards you? Are they shoulder towards you? Take the whole thing, but please don't take one piece of body language in isolation, because you'll probably be wrong.
Well, look, there's something I want to actually pick up on this letter that I want to throw to you too. Dear Angie, I met this beautiful girl at college called Kelly. She has beautiful swaying red hair. Mm-hmm. What's with the hair colour? I'm confused here, but this is where I'm even more confused. She reminds me of someone I used to know. Mm-hmm. Does he want Kelly, or does he want Kelly because she's a reminder of someone else that's already been in his life?
Well, that's the $64,000 question,
okay,
isn't it, really?
Okay, let's leave that one there. Mark, Scott, thank you very much. And we must do this again. Maybe do body language 1 month, or maybe do, I don't know, interview technique or something. I think we could get something going here. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.